Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of the TakeCast. My name is Davis Matic. You guys can find me on Twitter at Davis Matic. In this episode, I am joined by Kevin Cole from Pro Football Focus to recap some of the big takeaways from the 2022 NFL draft, you know, discussing some of the process stuff by these teams and of course some of the wide-ranging fantasy football impacts and ways to attack the betting markets as a result of who was selected in the draft. I think you guys will enjoy this conversation. If you want to support the show, you can get bonus episodes on patreon.com/takecast. That's always awesome when you guys do that. Or you can just leave a rating or review on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. Now let's go ahead and get into the episode. All right, everyone, welcoming Kevin Cole back to the program. We got NFL draft takes. We got to fire off. It is Wednesday, May 4th right now. And, you know, everyone hates Ryan Tannehill right now because he said he didn't want to mentor Malik Willis. But we've got lots of new data, new data points for how teams are making decisions, which teams are good, which teams are bad. And I thought it was a pretty interesting draft. One of the more interesting drafts to follow. I didn't watch the broadcast very much, just on Thursday night. Apparently people said it was awful TV. So take that for whatever it's worth.
I was kind of just tuning into the, God paid the bills here at PFF draft show there. I tried to do both at the same time. I guess I'm just not a multiple TV guy. So I was doing that most of the time. I think you get a little better coverage than you get whoever's, some player from two decades ago reading off the card and screaming into the microphone about who's actually being drafted. It's so late. The picks were happening so much later than it was getting reported. I felt like it was the worst ever as far as what was being reported on Twitter versus when the actual pick was coming out. I was getting picks, like multiple picks sometimes ahead of when they were actually coming out.
Yeah, I did the ship chasing broadcast and the underdog show, and it was like, and I had the broadcast up on my phone, and I mean, we would literally be talking about, like, on the show, we'd be talking about pick 18 and pick 16 was about to happen on the broadcast or whatever. Also, the last 19 through 32 picks sucked. That sucked because we were all waiting for the Chiefs to take a wide receiver, for the Cowboys to take a wide receiver, for the Bills to maybe be dumb and take Breece Hall. You know, is Pickens going to go? Is this going to be the most wide receivers that ever go in the first round? We had six go between pick 10 and pick 18. And then it was just defensive players. And it's just like, well, I'm not here for this.
Yeah. I actually got involved a little bit in the mocking process, but I'm always wrong on this. I mean, I concentrate more on the skill position guys. So I think I had Pickens and Sky Moore sneaking into the first round, and that was way off.
I bet over 6.5 wide receivers and Pickens under 32.5. So there was like a moment on like the Vikings are about to pick at 32. And I'm like, this could be my best ever NFL draft betting year, or just, another like fine picking up nickels off the street type year. So I was really hoping or for the Packers to come up to 32 for Christian Watson is kind of what I was hoping for. And it was a good first round. But one of the things I wanted to focus on to begin with is, kind of how we evaluate these teams' drafts at the time in which they happen. I think grading a draft 3 years later is kind of a meaningless exercise, but it does feel like our main way for evaluating if a team had a good draft or a bad draft is how they drafted relative to mock drafts, right? So the Chiefs had a good draft because they got a bunch of guys after they were mocked. The Ravens had a great draft because they, basically it's the equivalent of the auto drafter just drafting off of ADP and getting every guy who slides 10 picks past.
Yeah. I mean, okay, the idea that you cannot grade a draft right when it happens, this thing that we're going to hear all the time from people who think they have some sort of novel point or something like that. It'd be like, well, guess what? We don't know what's going to happen. We have to wait till, whether or not they get in the Hall of Fame 20 years from now, then we can decide whether it was a good draft or not. I mean, that's stupid, right? That's stupid. But at the same time, the problem is most grading that we see on the drafts are also stupid. So like the way they're done are pretty stupid because they're done by the same people who are coming up with these big boards and ranking players. So what else are they going to do other than tell us oh, this guy went way before where I had him ranked, so this is bad. And this guy went way after where I had him ranked, so this is good. And that's what ends up happening there. So there has been research done on this. Timo Riske here at PFF, he did some research on this, and it goes along with what's logical. And, you know, broad picture is reaches are more likely to be actual reaches as far as the value that you're getting versus the expected sure. at that position. Then steals are likely to be steals. There's steals are not really a thing, maybe a slight bit of a thing. Reaches are a thing. And the logical thing is you only need one team to make a mistake to reach on a player. You just need one team to turn in that card. For a steal, if someone falls 10 spots, you need 9 teams to be making a mistake and then someone to take advantage of it. So it's just much more likely, logically, that one team like the Patriots this year are just throwing that card in way before everyone else.
So that, I mean, and that does make sense, right? They're the Patriots, right? They take Cole Strange at 29. They take Tyquan Thornton, who is like expected to be a fourth round wide receiver at 55. And then, you know, the converse is, oh, the Ravens. Oh my gosh. No team. We can't keep letting them get away with this, right? The Breaking Bad gif. And it's like, I mean, the Ravens probably had a pretty good draft, but I don't have an in-depth scouting report on Kyle Hamilton or whatever, but I do feel like our priors also really factor into this, right? Where it's like at this point in Bill Belichick and the Patriots organization, where they are at, we expect them to have a bad draft. So when they do something like take Tyquan Thornton in the second round, we just are like, that's a bad pick. Whereas the Ravens take some safety 3 picks after he's expected to go on the grinding the mocks thing. And we're like, huge value, like smash. He's a football player, you know?
Yeah. I mean, this is part of the whole draft discussion. It's why it's hard to discuss the draft without being a little overly negative, because it is about avoiding mistakes, though, I feel like, in the most part, when you're looking at these things. So yeah, for the Ravens, we're not going to praise them a ton for definitely getting steals, but I think it's less likely that they make mistakes. And the one thing that I factor in, so if I'm going to say, I'm not going to give too much credit for steals, I'm going to give a little bit more of a negative for reaches. The one thing that I'll give basically full credit for is when a team trades back and they accumulate value that way. So that's one way where most people don't put this into their draft equation at all. But even if you look at like the Ravens taking Tyler Lindebaum in the first round, not really earlier than his DK over under on his draft position. Yeah, later than his expected big board position, but he's a center. So what does it mean? But they did also trade back a couple of spots and picked up a little incremental value, which just gives you more margin for error. So I feel like that is the biggest thing for all these teams. Give yourself more margin for error because you are going to make mistakes, and it's kind of avoiding giving yourself less margin for error. And that's what most teams do, is they don't give themselves enough margin for error because they just know that this guy is the guy.
Now, is there a point of diminishing returns on trading back? How many third round picks would you have to give to make up the difference of the 15th round pick? Like, is the entire, and you only have so many roster spots, right? Like that's the other thing, is you only have 52 roster spots. Probably what do you think? Most teams probably know 35 guys who are stone cold for sure making the team, not being cut. So it's like, how many third round picks does a team really need?
Yeah, I mean, theoretically, there are constraints on, you know, how many players you can properly coach, how many players you can fit on the roster, all these sorts of things. But I don't know, just from people I spoke with who are in the NFL also, I don't think that's a big problem. I don't think they're like, oh, you know what? We got too many players here. We have too many guys. I think they want to take looks at more and more players. And what teams find out, even though we love to say, if you don't know anything about guys after their rookie season, we don't know anything for so long, we got to give them time to develop. The reality is these teams know pretty early.
That's something I've really come around on, is
we're talking like rookie mini camp. They know sometimes whether these guys are good or not. So just getting yourself more looks there does not mean you have to fully develop this player, this third round player, for his entire 4-year contract. Give yourself more of those early looks. And in this draft in particular, whether it's true or not, I don't know, but the Ravens, the Browns, the Colts, other organizations, I think is being smarter, all said that because of the COVID year, because players were coming out later, the average age of the prospect was about a year older than in a normal draft.
True too. Yeah.
This year, because of that, the third round, the back half of the third round, fourth round were kind of sweet spots. So picking up a couple of picks there, I think maybe had enhanced value versus prior years also.
Yeah, another tangent here is like, that's something I've really come around on after just like, you know, kind of listening to lots of podcasts and reading is like, coaches like get guys in for rookie mini camps. They're like, oh shit, this guy can't play. Or is like not receiving the coaching well. Like they're telling him to do something and he's just like, I can't do that.
Yeah. I mean, there's my man back here, Sashi Brown. RIP Sashi, although he's with the Ravens now as their like head of football operations. So he was on a panel once I saw. He won't talk about what happened with the Browns, right? And he won't mention player names, but it's kind of obvious who he's talking about. He said there was one time where he drafted he's mentioned a wide receiver. So we know it's Corey Coleman, that he drafted a wide receiver. And basically 2 weeks into camp, the coaches were like, this guy's, we're done with him. Like, we don't want anything to do with this guy.
And then we got the evidence of that. I mean, we saw the evidence of that being true in Hard Knocks. Is he just was like complaining all the time and like, it was like alligator arming his routes and like not practicing. Like
that's the 15th overall pick. Okay. That's the 15th overall pick. So if that's happening to the first draft pick that you take in the draft, the 15th overall pick, your team is like the worst roster in the NFL for that 2016 year. And their coaches are willing to be like, okay, I'm done with you. Third round pick seems like wouldn't be much of an issue just to move on from that.
Yeah. I mean, how often does that happen where a third round pick doesn't even make the team? Yeah, like that can't happen that often. Like, I bet
it doesn't happen that often. We've seen some guys get cut. I mean, we've seen first rounders get cut after a season now, but you're right. It doesn't happen that often. We'll see what Kadarius Toney is traded for in the next month or two. That'll give us some signal on what first round picks are worth, who are kind of malcontents.
Well, they got his replacement. They drafted Wandale, right?
I know. They're standing hard on the fact that that's not the case. They're like, oh, he's like Tony, but you want as many of those players as you could have. Can you imagine like a whole offense of Kadarius Tonys running within 5 yards of the line of scrimmage? That would be awesome.
Yeah, I mean that's Cliff Kingsbury's like final evolution of his offense is just five Kadarius Tonys, maybe four Kadarius Tonys and then like one slightly larger one to play tight end to sub in for Zach Ertz, like a 210 pound version of him. Drake London as the first wide receiver. He was like the most mystery box prospect to me because he only played like, 30 total games in college, maybe not even that because of he played 8 games as a senior and I think, as a junior and then 5 games in 2020. Like he barely played. I probably would have taken Jameson Williams, honestly, as the top wide receiver, ACL and all. But what did you make of that?
Yeah, the fact that it's the second time I'm referring to my mock draft is making myself sick. But I was going to say, I did mock Williams to the Falcons because I feel like they could have slow rolled him in what is kind of like a tank season anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, I think London is good. I think he's not JJ Arcega-Whiteside or
is that he is Pac-12 stud JJ Arcega-Whiteside who scored a touch. JJ Arcega-Whiteside, his final season at Stanford, scored a touchdown on 18% of his targets.
Yeah, I mean, when I watched his highlights, this is how I do all my scouting, of course.
Just
bombs highlights, always. When I watched it and I saw like 7 straight contested catches, I got a little nervous. I immediately had flashbacks to Arcega-Whiteside and watching that, but he does a little bit. He does more than that. I did some work where I'm looking at how they do contested catches versus press coverage versus not. He was in a similar-ish sort of bucket to those guys, but a little bit better. So I think he's strong. I think he's good. I think the issue is the 8 games in his final season. The fact that they just fed him the ball on screens and other stuff too is, you know, pumping up his production there. And I'm trying to think back to the last time we had a guy with an abbreviated but very strong final season.
Well, I was way overstating
Devontae Parker is probably the last guy who had like a really good last year, but it was a short abbreviated year.
I was way overstating the amount of college games that Drake London played, by the way. He played 20 college games and he was good. He was good in those games, right? I mean, I'm not trying to FUD Drake London. I did think it was a weird fit because him and Kyle Pitts kind of basically do the same thing. Like
that's another thing. Yeah.
The other thing though about Burks and London though is like I actually don't really care if guys are getting their production on screen because NFL teams run those plays all the time. Like think of some of the best wide receivers in the NFL, like not Devontae Adams or Justin Jefferson, but Tyreek gets tons of his production on screens. CeeDee Lamb, they run screens for him. Like I mean, those are free yards. Like, why are we punishing teams for like why would we punish Drake London when his NFL team should probably ask him to do that?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think maybe it harkens all the way back to Cordarrelle Patterson and the fact that he was like so much of his production was on screens when he was in college. He just didn't have that much production. So I think that's probably a bigger problem. Bigger problem is if you have a lot of screens and you're not actually even catching the ball that much as a wide receiver. That's not the problem with London or with Burks. And when it comes to Burks versus London, I think we clearly saw that the NFL decided the top tier of receiver was, it was London, not in this order necessarily, but the top tier, London, Wilson, Olave, and then Jameson Burks. Williams, because Burks is not in there though, because I heard,
I think
the NFL's perspective, because the Ravens were at 14, they said they were getting calls from people in the 20s about trading down probably okay. for a wide receiver. And when Williams was gone, those calls, that was it. No one else wanted to come up for Dotson or for Burks.
Yeah. I mean, I thought my take was Dotson was the worst pick of the first round. My thought would be that
It was a weird trade back to take yourself out of the top guys and then draft
I mean, on their board, maybe they view Dotson and Olave as very similar. Would kind of be my guess.
Clearly. Yeah.
But my thought would be is that if you got the big boards of all 32 NFL teams and you put them together, the Commanders would have been the high point on Dotson. And I would think probably a lot of teams had him in the Sky Moore, George Pickens range of like talent and big board. And like, we're talking about, perceptions of teams influencing what we think of what they do. I mean, I just think the Commanders are hopeless. Like, I don't think they do anything well from top to bottom. So I'm just assuming that, and Dotson seems like a weird fit because like he does the same things McLaurin does. I don't know. I thought it was not good.
Yeah, man, okay. The Commanders could be hopeless, but I do think we sometimes have this impression of teams from a very long timeline, and you could say this points back to ownership, right? So maybe
that's what I'm saying.
We do have new regimes that come in, but yet we still think like, oh, the Jets are the Jets, even when Joe Douglas came in, and Joe Douglas low key not so great also. But yeah, I think sometimes we're reading to that a little bit too much, but I guess they tried to get some value in that trade back. At least it just seemed curious to me at the very least.
Also, I want to go back to what you said about Cordarrelle Patterson, where if he came in the NFL right now, he'd be a stud. I mean, he'd be a mega stud because there's a clear.
I don't know about that. I like receivers who can catch the ball. That's my issue.
Ball just fine.
I was watching something on him, even a scouting report, because I had read something when he came out about the percentage of his yards that came from screens, and I couldn't find it anywhere. But I'm looking at these scouting reports, and it's like iffy hands. It was just all over every single one of these. But they're like, just get the ball into his hands, and he's a stud.
I mean, Patterson was one of those guys who came to football late. He actually like ran track and he played at JUCO. I mean, before he was a Viking, he had one season of competitive experience above junior college. Like it's, and I mean, we just have seen this, right? We saw Ayuk do this. We saw Debo do this for the 49ers where like Ayuk's first touchdown in the NFL was on a rush and Debo scored like 9 rushing touchdowns last year. Like having these guys where the sole goal of a play is to get the ball in their hands. Like, that's so much more valuable of a thing than it was 5 years ago.
Yeah, but I think you have to have some ability to threaten going down the field also, or else it makes it a little difficult. So I think that's the little bit of the difference there. But what's good for this receiver class is like guys like Burks, he did a lot around the line of scrimmage, but then sometimes he went down the field and stacked guys and caught the ball down the field. So I'm pretty high on Burks. I don't know where
Burks is my 101 in rookie drafts, super flex or non. I he is the top pick for me. What do you make of that?
It's tough with Hall there, but yeah.
Not that tough for me.
I mean, I can I can get with that. And I think the interesting thing is the over unders are out in a few places for production for yeah, rookies.
Prize Picks has them, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just looking at DK here. So they have Burks at 869.5 yards, which is 130 more than Drake London, who's second. And they have him at 5.5 touchdowns weighted to the under, and they have Drake London at 4.5 weighted to the over. So, I mean, for me, like if I was going to draft someone in Dynasty, wouldn't 10 out of 10 times you just want a rookie who was drafted, who was in the first round, who put up more production than any other rookie? Like, why would that not be the guy that you would want to have going into year two? And the betting markets are saying that that's going to be Treylon Burks right now because of his role in Tennessee and no one to compete with.
So I mean, I'm with you 100%. He's got, like, as long as he's better than Robert Woods coming off of an ACL tear, he's going to get the ball a lot. So the Breece Hall bull case is, well, he's a really good running back prospect. His competition is Michael Carter, Ty Johnson, and Tevin Coleman. You know, should be, and Michael Carter had a good season last year, by the way.
Yeah, yeah. Discount so, CEH is what I called him coming into the league. Maybe so my
I mean, it's hard to be worse. Hard to be worse. So my thing with Breece is, so he's Robert Saleh is the head coach. Michael Furr is the offensive coordinator. Both of these guys, you know, are associated with the Shanahan regime. I mean, LaFleur just followed Shanahan around the NFL, right? Followed him from Atlanta to San Francisco. And where is the evidence that we're going to get a 300 touch season out of Breece Hall? Like, that's kind of, that seems to me what the market or the market is saying. Breece Hall's likelihood of posting one of these insane rookie running back seasons, which happen all the time, right? Which do totally happen all the time in NFL history, is greater than the chance that Breece Hall becomes a CeeDee Lamb, DJ Moore-esque dynasty value or whatever. And I think that seems wrong. I just think that
Is the narrative on Shanahan, I can't keep track of these things, is it now that you don't want that for a running back? Because I felt like, If you rewind back 5 years, you would have said, like, oh, look what happened with Alfred Morris. Look what happened with, you know, Kubiak again off of that tree with Arian Foster and Steve Slayton before that and other guys. Like, we would have had the exact opposite
reaction. So you're half right, but the what you want is you want to acquire running backs in those offenses for cheap. Elijah Mitchell, not Trey Sermon, right? You want Tyrion Davis Price. I'm being serious. Like,
maybe you don't even want Tyrion Davis Price. He went in the third round. That's too early. That's too early for Shanahan. He's going to UDFA will step in instead. And Shanahan is insane. That's the problem. He has no clue how to draft running backs or in what order to draft them. Going back to his first draft in San Francisco, during the middle of the draft, he's like, what's his name? Was it Mike Williams? No.
Joe Williams.
He's like,
traded
Joe Williams
up for him and never gave him a touch.
Let's put him back on our board. I'm putting him back on our board from off of our board. We're putting him back on the board. We're trading up to get him in the fourth round. And then I don't think he ever plays like a single snap for the team. So the dude has no idea what he's doing. So maybe we don't want to impute too much into that, is that he doesn't know how to draft the better running back with earlier rather than later in the draft.
Yeah. I mean, just as we're like, just while I'm making this point, Trey Sermon was drafted with the 88th pick last year and was a first round rookie pick in dynasty drafts. Tyrion Davis Price was drafted with the 93rd pick, and he is maybe not even going to be selected in some of these drafts, which, like, that is just like an obvious, like, market inefficiency to me, which is
sticky. It's sticky. People love Sermon going into the draft.
Oh, is that true?
Yeah. He was like seen. I'm trying to it's tough to even think back, but it was the three guys in the top tier, right? It was Harris, Etienne, and Williams. And then commonly he was seen as the fourth. He was seen as the most likely guy to be the fourth. So when they traded up to get him in the third round, you know, bottles were popping for people that were high on Trey Sermon. And then obviously one of the most disappointing rookie seasons you could have with those sorts of expectations.
Yeah. Let's talk about Debo. What do you think Debo is worth? Do you think the 49ers should pay him all this money that he's asking for? Or do you think he is the classic case of paying for past production and not future production because he just had what is going to be far and away the most efficient season of his career?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think it's more the latter. Yeah, he's not going to be this efficient again. The touchdowns were insane. The rushing touchdowns in particular were insane. How long those are. Like, his expected touchdown number was, you know, half of what it ended up being on the season. If you just look at league averages by, you know, yards to the goal line and then his targets and everything else that happened there. So definitely overly efficient. And I think the market kind of told us which the right thing. If you heard the offer, supposedly there was an offer where it sounded better than it actually was at first, because at first I think it said a first round pick and a pick swap. You're like, oh, more than a first round pick. No, it was like a first round pick and a swap in the other direction, right? That takes value away from that first round pick. I think it was like swapping, you know, your first for a second or something like that. So it would have been less than a first round pick was the compensation that we're talking about there. And where AJ Brown is getting a first round pick and a late third round pick. So vastly different markets there. And I think that's fair. And I feel like they should be paid differently also, but you know, you have the floor at Christian Kirk, which makes it difficult.
Yeah. And I mean, Christian Kirk ruined the NFL, right? I mean, are you on board with this take? This is my biggest take of this offseason, is that Trent Baalke ruined or made it better, depending on your perspective, if you like all these guys getting traded. I mean, in my opinion, Tyreek doesn't get traded, AJ Brown doesn't get traded, Hollywood Brown likely doesn't get traded, maybe does because of like the intricacies of what's going on with the Hopkins suspension and stuff. And I think Adams still probably does get traded because he is worth a lot of money, and I don't think the Packers were going to pay him. But I mean, basically, And how good does that trade look for the Browns right now, acquiring Amari Cooper for a fifth round pick?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't think Cooper's seen as being on the same level as those guys, but you're definitely right. I don't know if it's that much Kirk. I feel like the NFL, and we're seeing it, you know, how many trades happen in the draft, just period. Obviously, the Rams stuff, you know, F them picks. I think there's like a FOMO aspect now, where they used to be people were risk averse to trade away picks for players, because if those players bust, you're screwed and you're going to get fired. But now it's like your fear of missing out of the upside of potentially building those sorts of players. So I think more than anything, what's happened this season is teams are willing to trade away a lot for these players. So I don't know if it's Christian Kirk as much as saying, we're going to give you a first round pick and then a few more picks for Tyreek Hill. I'm not sure if teams be willing to do that for, you know, a 28-year-old wide receiver a couple of years ago. I feel like that kind of greased the wheels more than even the salary stuff.
Yeah. I mean, that's interesting. Like, and I guess, yeah, because wide receiver is a more premium position now. So it makes more sense. Like, trading a first round pick for AJ Brown is like kind of a move you have to do if you want to be a serious team. Like, you can't really get away with Jalen Guyton as your second wide receiver anymore. Like, you got to have, which I think is why Mike Williams just got all that money. Teams have definitely learned that quarterback production is like very sensitive to wide receiver quality.
Yeah. 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 I mean, and these are almost, you know, godfather kind of offers. It's tough to say, nah, we'll pass on taking all of these picks and then potentially have to pay our guy a certain amount. So I don't know. I don't know. I do think, though, for like the AJ Brown of the world and the Debo, that's when the Christian Kirk money becomes interesting, because, you know, like AJ Brown, he's signing this deal, an extension, 4 years, $25 million a year. He still has this fourth year of his deal for $4 million added into it. So it's a $21 million a year for 5 years. Christian Kirk is starting his contract immediately, right? $18 million a year for 4 years, I think, right? So,
like, and is older.
Those are actually kind of close-ish, you know?
Like, Christian Kirk is 25 and AJ Brown is 24. So right. You also are like a year young. I thought Christian Kirk was older than that. I mean, it's a bad contract by the Jaguars, but also like they're the Jaguars and that's what they have to do.
I feel like we see bad. What did Galladay get last year from the Giants? He got the bag.
4 years, $72 million.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of guys get the bag in free agency. So I don't think that was the driving factor as much as teams being willing to trade everything away. And I thought it was like a rookie quarterback thing, which has been the case most of the time, but Derek Carr doesn't fall into that situation. But we definitely saw that here with AJ Brown, right? He's going, Jalen Hurts is making like $800,000 a year or something like that. It's insane how much cap space that gets cleared up from that.
Well, it is interesting that like the old knowledge in the NFL is that to have elite wide receivers, you pretty much have to draft them. Like the means of acquiring one of the 10 best wide receivers in the NFL just used to basically be impossible, right? The guy like our buddy Cleve T.A., I remember he tweeted out like the last 10 years of wide receiver free agency and there were like no hits, like literally like not one hit. Like, and you know, the Diggs thing really fell in the Vikings lap. And I think maybe that was the start of it, where trading a first round pick for a wide receiver actually seems pretty good now. Like, it, because you would probably rather be the team knowing, well, shit, we just got AJ Brown, instead of, well, there's a 25% chance that Treylon Burks is going to be as good as AJ Brown, even though you are obviously paying them more money.
Yeah. I mean, I think it was like wide receivers changing teams is bad. Like, we don't know if they're necessarily that good or not, when the truth was probably those free agent wide receivers were just not any good. I mean, but you could still say that receiver is a player you have to draft in a way, because it's still not free agents that are any good. It's still, you got to trade away something to get them. So you're not drafting them directly, but you're using substantial draft capital to go get them.
I mean, Juju Smith-Schuster signing in free agency, Marquez Valdes-Scantling signing in free agency. I'm not ready to put the nail in that coffin yet. My take is that the Chiefs are not going to take the massive step back that people were anticipating on this trade. I think that they're going to kind of cobble it together. I can't tell if that's pure hopium. Like, I can't tell if that's my brain tricking myself, or if this approach of like, I mean, they have 13 wide receivers under contract right now. So like, I can't tell if this is me hoping or actually being like, well, they kind of have a plan here and maybe it works.
Yeah. I mean, it's probably safe to bet on the quarterback without the top wide receiver versus the reverse, right? Like, Tyreek Hill's production is probably going to plummet vis-a-vis whatever happens to
his ADP is still crazy high, by the way. If you're drafting in fantasy football right now, he's like an early second round pick. And I don't see any way he pays that off. Waddle would have to like disappear. Waddle would have to become like not a thing, I think.
Yeah. And again, your new Shanahan disciple, who talks about running the football
like a donkey.
The problem is his like affectation when he talks. He kind of seems like he's almost stoned or something like that. Like, he doesn't seem smart, even though I guess he's a Harvard. I don't know, he went to one of those Ivy League schools. So he doesn't sound great. But then when he speaks sometimes, and I clipped him a couple of times when he was talking about fourth down stuff and he was talking about running the ball, he just starts talking without really knowing what he's gonna say. It sounds really bad. He's like, I'm an absolutist about not being an absolutist about things, about fourth down decisions. I'm like, what the hell does that mean? Then you are an absolutist, right? Because you just said you're, but he also said running the ball, what did he say? Like, keeps the ball away from the other team. He's like, the other team can't score if they don't have the ball. And I'm like, dude, like, it's the number of possessions. It doesn't matter what happens with that. It was just very rudimentary sort of things. But coaches don't have to know that shit to be good. I mean, we've seen that with Shanahan himself.
Is Shanahan a good coach, though?
I think, I mean, he seems like he schemes stuff pretty well. How much better production do you want out of Jimmy Garoppolo? He's top three quarterback in EPA per dropback over his career, over the last few years. So
what's going to happen there? What's going to happen is are we running back Jimmy Garoppolo again as the starting quarterback for the San Francisco 49ers?
I was being yelled at a year ago for saying there was a good chance that we're going to get like an Alex Smith type of season out of Jimmy Garoppolo. Everyone's like, that's insane. They're not going to pay him $25 million when they can cut him for nothing. Now, it would be insane if they did it this year. That would be like, you basically admit that Trey Lance is god awful, that the guy stinks, right? And
do we have any 49ers player on the record saying they want Trey Lance to be the quarterback? Because I've heard through
we're not really in that season yet, but are we in that season or not?
Well, I've heard through back channels, and this could be true or not true, that part of this fracture between Debo and the 49ers organization is that Debo's like, I don't fucking catch passes from this guy. This guy stinks.
Yeah, that could be. I mean, if I were Debo or even George Kittle or even Brandon Ayuk, like, they're all doing pretty well. Ayuk had a little, you know, things could have been better. For some reason, Shanahan, again, like, doghouses guys for no reason, a little bit.
Playing behind River Crackraft.
Yeah, at the beginning of the season. So, like, it's logical for those guys because, let's face it, they're thinking about themselves more than they're thinking about, like, oh, what, how are we going to win a Super Bowl? They should be, at least. Or at least, you know, thinking about both, right? It's logical for those guys to say, hey, I'm a first-team all-pro wide receiver with Jimmy Garoppolo. I'd like to run that back. That sounds good to me, right? Versus bringing in an unknown. And I believe the Shanahan did not want Trey Lance. And
I believe that too. I believe he wanted Mac Jones and was basically bullied into people saying, like,
the guy loves Kirk Cousins and, you know, Brian Hoyer types and, you know, Matt Ryan,
CJ Beathard.
Yeah. So Nick he Mullins. likes guys that are just going to go out there and just execute. You know, just try to be just throw the ball like Debo, what is he going to do with Trey Lance? Trey Lance is going to try to bomb the ball over the top. What Garoppolo was good at was, and it ends in an awful looking interception, one out of every, you know, 20 passes, but just fire the ball right into the middle, right between the zone, right, you know, over some guy's head, potentially tipped interception, and Debo would catch that at the perfect moment and be able to run an additional 30 yards after that. Is Trey Lance going to do that? Most quarterbacks, you know, aren't that type of guy. He's not that type of guy.
Yeah. It's just like, I don't know. It does feel like there is a world where we live in where, like, Trey Lance never enters a season as the starting quarterback for the 49ers. I really hope this is not true. The market is saying it's not true. You know, these fantasy, like, the best ball championships and stuff, but Jimmy Garoppolo and the Panthers don't have the cap money anymore after everything that went down with, they could get it. But as of right now, they don't seem like the team that's going to take on Jimmy. And it did seem like that for a while.
Well, I mean, the quarterback market is definitely thin as far as teams that want quarter. I mean, that's why these guys fell in the draft, I think, too. There are just fewer teams out there than we think who want a quarterback. So Baker and Jimmy are, I don't know. I don't know where they're going to go right now. And Carolina, yeah, you can't be like, oh, you know what? We have Sam Darnold paying him $18 million, and we're going to bring in Jimmy Garoppolo and pay him $25 million a year. That's not a recipe you can do.
Well, feels like Baker's going to Seattle, right? Feels like that's what's going to happen.
I don't know. I guess so. I don't know. I don't know what Seattle's plan is. They're drafting fucking running backs in the second round. I don't know what the hell they're doing.
Kenneth, would it surprise you to know that Kenneth Walker is the consensus, like, 1.3 right now in rookie drafts? Because that really surprised me when I did my ranks.
Yeah, no, that would surprise me. I mean, they have Chris Carson. Re-signing Chris Carson a couple of years ago was like a big thing for them. And so they re-signed Chris Carson. He plays, what, 4 games? They've already paid the guy like $6 million. He might never play for them again. They re-signed Rashad Penny, former first-round pick, for okay money.
$6 million, I think.
Now they draft a guy in the second round. It's just incredible. Incredible content for to see Seahawks fans, who I think are generally sharp, because Russell Wilson was like an analytics guy versus Andrew Luck. Like, he had the better numbers. So that whole fan base got pushed, I believe, a little bit towards being a sharper fan base in order to justify Russell Wilson. And now it's just
pain. Well, and they were the DVOA champions too for like 2 years in a row. They were like the number one team in Football Outsiders DVOA. So, like, our buddy Ben Baldwin, Zach Whitman, some of these guys are like big noted Seahawks fans. And then the organization has just done a total heel turn to become, I don't know. It's like, I think Pete Carroll, like, maybe wants to be Bill Belichick or something. And, like, that's part of what is playing into this, is like, he just wants to play his boomer ball.
Oh, well, he clearly believes. I mean, I don't think these guys are, you know, trying to lose. He clearly believes you run the ball and you play defense, and then you get a little few little marginal gains through throwing the ball, and that's that. So I don't know. I mean, would you, if you're a Seattle fan, would you be happy about Baker Mayfield going there? I don't know what sort of.
I would, but I'm an Oklahoma fan, so I love Baker, and I mean, I think Baker throwing to Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf with the two new tackles they drafted, if they're any good, like, I think that team could be decent.
Yeah, I think it could be okay.
That's not conventional.
If Baker had a chance to go to Detroit, that was one I was thinking about him, only because John Dorsey is there who drafted Baker. And yeah. Detroit might say to themselves, you know, we're going to be good this year. You know, maybe I don't know. Their defense is
still pretty bad.
They're in like greatest draft ever mode. Everyone in the city of Detroit, you know, this is like the loser Super Bowl after a draft week when everyone, all the Jets fans and Lions fans are just. Like,
I mean, don't put that evil on just them, because Chiefs fans are doing the same thing. Chiefs fans are you know, I am a nominal Chiefs fan. I really am more just like a Patrick Mahomes fan, but I love the Chiefs. And, you know, I'm in all my friends, we're all from Kansas and everything. And we have our big group chat with all of our buddies in our fantasy football league. And we're all passing around, you know, the breathless A+ grades on their draft. And, oh, Karflaitis was a huge steal. And Sky Moore is going to be amazing. And, oh my gosh, they got a starting cornerback in the third round and, you know, all this stuff. So it's not just the loser teams.
But the difference is you do that during the season too. Like, there are things to celebrate also during the season for
sure.
Jets fans or for Lions fans. Like, this is it. This is all you're going to get. And you're going to hope you're going to get it in the season that's coming up. And, you know, that's to be determined at best.
Yeah. I mean, what did you make of the Sky Moore selection? Is Sky Moore, like, have we already found the new Tyreek Hill?
Yeah, I don't think we found the new Tyreek. I mean, I wouldn't even like Tyreek Hill that much coming out. That shows you, like, how you can be wrong, so wrong about sure. some of these guys. I think it was a good pick. I was surprised but not surprised that he fell to there. I mean, there's a little bit of, like, the small school sort of bias. I could see why he fell to there. I thought he was going to go earlier. He had a over under in the mid 30s or maybe 40 on DraftKings. So at 55, he went well over that number. I mean, when I model things out, he looks like a second tier guy. He should be like a second tier guy, as opposed to seeing him, you know, going after the Wandale Robinsons and Tyquan Thorntons of the world.
How does Tyquan Thornton get drafted ahead of Sky Moore? I mean, what are the Patriots
happens
doing?
Every year. I mean, happens every year, right? Like D. Eskridge going pretty early last in the second
McCole round. McCole Hardman going ahead of DK Metcalf to the Kansas year. City Chiefs.
Yeah. Yeah. Paris Campbell also went earlier that year. So yeah, I don't know. It's funny that the small fast guys have been just total busts in the second round, like the Andy Isabella types, McCole Hardman types. And then the big guys have fallen for no reason. I guess Moore is over 200, right? So
Sky, yeah.
Yeah.
205, so I think.
So, I mean, my models put him in the similar sort of category as those first rounders.
Oh, no,
like
no, he's 190. He's 190.
Oh, he is? Okay. Yeah. They put him in the same category as someone like Olave or someone like that.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
I'm pretty bullish. I'm pretty bullish on him. I mean, okay. Is Bill Belichick, was it just all Brady? Was it just all, I mean, at the end of the day, was it just all, these drafts are so bad, it's like parody at this point. I mean, it's like every year, he just takes the 25-year-old safety, a lineman, three rounds too early. So, like, Tyquan Thornton is like not even ever going to play for them. And he's like a horrible fit. What is happening in this building?
I don't know. I mean, they haven't been drafting that well. But no, I don't think he's bad. I mean, I think, again, by the things that I believe you can really fully judge someone on, trades, again, they traded back in this one.
Yep.
They traded back. They gained some value. They consistently do that. They let players walk. They don't sign guys to huge deals and then get stuck underneath a mountain of dead cap. So, you know, they do those incremental things. This, I agree, taking guys, you know, 40, 50 spots above where you're assuming they're going to go is not exactly – winning, but it's less, as long as he's doing the other things right, then I can cut him some slack on this.
But are they doing the other things right?
Well, they traded back. Like I said, they traded
back. No, I mean, just mean like as an organization. Mike,
well, I thought their free agency was awful last year. And now, I mean, teams will say, you'll say like scoreboard that they did pretty well during the season, but I think that was mostly not even their free agents that had to do with that. I mean, the Aguilar, Bourne, I thought Hunter Henry was good though. Like I did agree with
that. $16 million for Jonnu Smith. And now they're talking about converting him to fullback because he's so useless in their system.
I mean, if Mac Jones didn't fall to them last year could have been, I was obviously way too early on this one, but I was basically saying this is like potential last hurrah for Belichick a year ago. And then they drafted Jones and he ended up being way better than you would have expected. If they didn't get Mac Jones, what would they have done last season? Cam Newton would have come back. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine if Cam Newton came back and they spent all that money? Oh, you probably like Cam Newton, but Cam Newton came back.
Not anymore. They spent all that money
in free agency. Like, what would they have done? They easily could have gone like 5-12 or something, you know, and the whole thing fell apart. And then it would have been like Belichick, grandpa, you know, let's get in the car. We're taking you to a new,
living situation. But even like the style of football they're playing is like regressive. And I've heard this theory floated out that like, I mean, obviously Belichick was ahead of the curve for a long time. They do things smart in the draft. They were one of the first teams to be really aggressive on fourth downs. But like Belichick was one of the guys who grinded the small edges when no other team was doing that. And now that more teams are grinding the small edges, they've lost some of their competitive advantage.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. I mean, like their relative advantage on fourth downs has gone from being near the top to very low. And the one when I've shown that before, people will say like, oh, well, they don't have Tom Brady anymore. It's like, what does that matter? Like you want to, like even having Cam Newton or someone like that, like you figure he was someone you'd want to go for it on a fourth and one with more so than even Tom Brady. So, yeah, I don't know. But again, I'm not going to harp too much on the reaches or the steals on there. I'm more just pick up that incremental value and see what happens and positional value. So of course, yeah, a guard isn't ideal in the first round.
I mean, the Cowboys did it. Not feeling good about that.
Yeah. I mean, everyone was putting them in but did you see that they actually decoded their board?
The board. Yeah. Amazing work from weirdo football Twitter to decode the board from
Jerry Jones. So yeah, Jahan Dotson was like much lower than what he was in the second. He had a second round grade somewhere for them. Trevor Penning was not in the first or second round for them. And then he ends up going to the New Orleans Saints. Saints are the worst team, worst front office in the
NFL. I mean, it's like people have been the tweet that Warren Sharp had a great tweet about like the list of players that were taken with the picks that the Saints traded. And it's like they just traded like a whole boat full of useful NFL players for the pick that ended up becoming Chris Olave.
Oh yeah, yeah. I have Warren muted actually. I can't take some of the content there. If you look at what they've done, they have had a few players who have hit big, who have lasted a long time, and those are like gold when it comes to ability to restructure their contracts and just continually kick the can down the road. And it saved them. Well, Drew Brees saved them for a very long time. And then now having a good players where they can just continually restructure and kick the can down the road has saved them for a while. And they're still going in. I mean, imagine the process of saying, we have no money, so we're just going to get an extra first round pick. Everyone on the planet knew they were going to take a wide receiver and a tackle, and they did. Yeah. And then they traded up again to get the wide receiver. Because they had to have this exact thing.
They should have just taken Burks. They could have just sat where they were and taken Burks and a tackle, and they would have been fine.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm not a huge fan of Penning either. Maybe it's just like I don't like the penalties. The guy had like 6 unsportsmanlike conduct penalties last year.
I'm not going to hold that against him because I think my favorite guy, George.
Those are drive killers, though.
Yeah, I mean, you can coach that stuff, though.
I guess. I mean, psycho is psycho, but yeah, go ahead.
Well, I really like George Pickens, and that was being thrown out about him, that he has like an attitude problem and that like he's is going to get penalties and stuff. Like there's like a whole highlight reel of him like literally throwing defenders to the ground at the end of run blocks because he just is like a psycho. The guy just loves to play football. But like for Pickens, for me, I'm like, that's a huge green flag. I'm like, I love that about this guy.
Well, it sounds like it goes deeper than that with Pickens. I mean, that's the rumor mill, right? For why he... I don't know if he fell that much, but he did. He fell a bit.
I mean, he was 14 months ago the consensus top wide receiver in this class, and then he tears his ACL, and you know, then all this whatever. I didn't read anything.
I mean, 14 months ago, Sam Howell was the number one pick. So what do you?
Spencer Rattler was the number one pick, which is like.
Well, I saw Howell in places too. Yeah, Howell was number two. Excuse me, on the PFF way too early. Mock.
The Rattler 101 to being benched for an 18-year-old and transferring. It's one of the funniest storylines of.
That's actually more excusable in some ways. Like he just got outplayed by a stud, right?
Except Brandon Williams kind of stunk. It's like he had one really good game against Texas.
Well, initially yeah. He was good, right? Yeah.
Let's see what else is. I mean, do you have any big takes on steals, guys that you know like more than the market for these rookie drafts right now?
Yeah, I mean, we talked about Sky Moore, so I know you're gonna like to hear that. So yeah, Moore is a guy that I have as a steal. A very uninspiring steal that I have also at wide receiver is David Bell for the Browns. The wide receiver two is just like completely wide open there. And, you know, he fell and they said he could play on the inside or the outside. I watched their press conference there. He fell because he ran the 4.68 and then did even worse at his pro day, which is hashtag not ideal. But still 23 years, right? Early declare, 21 years old, had elite market share numbers, despite he was playing with Rondale Moore earlier in his career. And again, he could just step right in. And when I put his top comps, now it assumed a slightly higher draft position for him, but on his top comp list, and he doesn't quite have the athleticism these guys do.
Devontae Adams.
Not that high, not first rounder, but Keenan Allen, Jarvis Landry, and Juju Smith-Schuster all showed up on his top 10 comps. So again, I think those guys are more athletic than he is, but if he could be a discount version of any of those guys on a team that needs someone to step in, I mean, who is it? Donovan Peoples-Jones and Anthony Schwartz, who doesn't look like he knew how to play football basically as a 20-year-old rookie. He could just step right in for what Jarvis Landry was doing, I think.
Yeah. I mean, that's one I'm kind of reluctantly in on, cause he was
PPR
so...
leagues, just pick him up.
Well, he was just so unathletic, but you're right. Yeah. David Bell is a good one. I mean, Mechie is an interesting one.
Yeah, Mechie is an interesting one. Is an interesting name there.
Jalen Tolbert is really interesting because if he's any good, he's going to be playing as the third wide receiver for that. And he might not be any good and they might just play James Washington, but there's a lot of opportunity for him there.
I mean, my model doesn't like Tolbert as much as I like him. He's a Just Bombs all-star for me. When I watched him, I was like, whoa, I was like, this is good. Like, this is really good. And he did. I mean, he was ridiculous in his last season. The problem is he's 23 years old and he's at a small school, but yeah, his measurables are all good. And he had like basically a 50% market share of receiving yards in his final season, which is totally insane, but it was South Alabama as a senior.
Well, South Alabama, but you know that we are still getting like the COVID ramifications from some of these guys. So it's like, who could say maybe he would have been an early declare or whatever.
True.
Which is sort of it. So
what do you think about Wandale Robinson?
Well, you're talking to the wrong guy because I love Wandale. Like Wandale is like, he was
well,
like,
what? Okay, give me your like arc or your range throughout the offseason. Cause I feel like Wandale was a name that people knew. Right. And like Wandale going in the second round, people could have said, okay, I get that pre-combine. The combine happens. He falls a ton, not even necessarily for the drills, because he ran a 4.44, although in his first 40.
He weighed 174 pounds.
Yeah, in his first 40, the unofficial time was like 4.5 something. So I think people like wrote him off because his arms were like the shortest arms in the history of the NFL, and then he weighed 179 pounds. But clearly he fell after that. And now he's kind of back where some people were suspecting he was going to, he could potentially go in the first place. But yet I feel like everyone's like, this guy's dead to me.
So started out super high on him.
Yeah.
Like maybe back end of the first round, super high. Weighs That's in, high. Weighs in at 100. Well, Wandale is like just like a perfect guy for today's NFL, right? Like he but had 100.
I mean, you said that about Patterson earlier. You could say that about Rondale Moore, right? And Moore is not
looking
well.
Rondale
so
could be good. We'll never know because he's in the Cliff Kingsbury black so, box. We'll never know.
I feel like a lot of these guys could be good. Could like there's a lot. There's too many of these slash types where they're like, oh man, in the right system.
Yeah, you got to go to the right system.
Yeah, how come none of these guys ever go to the right system?
Well, I think this one might be one because clearly they have a role. Like I mean, we've seen someone be successful in this role already, right? We saw Isaiah McKenzie when he was on the field was like huge success, right? Just like crushing for them. And
yeah, a wide receiver. Like that's kind of, that's a little bit of, yeah. I mean, wide receiver who was he crushing? I guess he was. All right, go ahead.
But so anyway, Wandale, if you didn't know, was actually recruited to Nebraska of all places as a running back. So like think about like the machinations that would have to go into a guy being recruited to the University of Nebraska as a running back. He does really well there for 2 years, like averages a bunch of yards per touch, bunch of yards per carry, basically learns wide receiver on the fly, then transfers to Kentucky in the SEC, totally changes positions, only gets 7 carries his final year at Kentucky, and dominates to a degree of like which you never see. He had 1,400 scrimmage yards. No other pass catcher on the team had more than 600 scrimmage yards. He, scores a bunch of touchdowns, like in all their big games comes through, which is something that I like to look at. Like, you know, this goes back to, our old, the Odell Beckham thing where like he got all his production against like Furman and stuff like that. And that didn't happen for Wandale, you know, for example, had, his second most catches of the year was against Georgia, for example. But basically he's just a profile of guy I like, which are these slash players. He's really fast. And the second round draft capital did a lot to allay my concerns. Cause if he was a fourth round pick, he's dead. We'll never see this guy. He'll never see the light of day on an NFL field, but being a second round pick is basically one very important vote of confidence that we will see him play.
Okay. So for running backs, a couple guys just quickly, Damian Pierce is probably the number one guy as far as a value type of guy, just because Rex Burkhead and, who else do they have there? Why is the name escaping me now? Burkhead basically is his competition there. So he can step right in. 224 pounds, caught a pass and a half. Not that bad. Production wasn't there, but whatever. You know, if you believe running backs don't matter, then you have to also believe it doesn't matter if they're not like that good from a production standpoint, if they fall into a good spot. So he would be a guy there. And I'm like ambivalent about James Cook. Some people seem to like him. And obviously he was the third running back off of the board, but I feel like during the press conference, Bean said, number one, he said he's a sub package back. So he said that, but we can also give him carries. So that I wasn't like beaming about that. And then he said, we can use him like another wide receiver. That's another one of these tropes where it just never happens in the NFL. They talk about that all the time about the running back, like, oh, he can be a wide receiver. It just rarely, rarely happens. The guys who've gotten the most production out wide or in the slot as running backs are like Dexter McCluster, Darren Sproles. Of course, Christian McCaffrey has done some of that, and then Kamara's done some of that, but it's just very rare. They talk about it a lot more than actually ends up happening. And does Josh Allen want to throw to running backs?
No.
So that's why I'm kind of down on Cook.
I mean, they clearly want him. to fulfill a role because they wanted to sign McKissick or whatever, but I don't think that is necessarily going to be that high usage of a role. The guy who I think is just going to piss everyone off and you're going to earn profit on where he goes is Brian Robinson, where clearly the team doesn't want to give Antonio Gibson 300 yeah. carries. Gibson has struggled with fumbles in his NFL career. They've given Peyton Barber carries in that offense. They were given freaking Jarrett Patterson carries in that offense. So I think Brian Robinson might be our guy. He's a guy I'm already taking in best ball drafts because I think he just comes in right away and is getting touches this year.
Yeah, no. I was higher than consensus on him going into the draft. We'll see. Well, I'll see where people end up coming out on him. I'm a guy that I wasn't necessarily as high on, but now post-draft could be interesting as Tyler Allgeier, this guy, because fifth round, not ideal, yeah. but Falcons, you know, they don't have Jack. So it's another one where if you're just looking for someone who could fall into a starting role, again, another 220 pounder. So he could conceivably do everything. He averaged over a couple of catches a game, 4-6, but whatever. It's at 224 pounds. So I'm not that worried about it. Again, like, why not? He's a guy that I would throw something at.
Yeah. I mean, that one makes sense. What did you think of the Cardinals taking Trey McBride after giving Zach Ertz that contract extension? I thought that was very bizarre.
I thought it was bizarre, but I don't scout these guys enough to really know when it comes to it. But whenever I hear anything about McBride, I'm always shocked that no one was really talking about him as a first rounder, right? After we've had, I mean, freaking Hayden Hurst was a first rounder a few years back. So I don't know. I like the talent.
Well, I think teams are rightfully just saying, like, we can get Hayden Hurst production from Dan Arnold. So, like, let's only draft athletic freak tight ends in the first round now.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. But he's pretty athletic too, right? I mean, he ran a 4 or 5 something. So let's look at, I'm going to look at Ertz's contract here. So it looks like, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess they have to play him through 2023. I was wondering if they could just get out after a year, and it doesn't look like they can.
They can't.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's a little bit curious, but we have the Hopkins stuff too. Who knows if Hopkins already kind of talked his way out of one location. They're probably regretting that contract, and now the guarantee, I don't know if there were any guarantees left, but now they're voided, of course, for Hopkins too. So
knows? That's a good point. Yeah,
who knows what'll end up happening on that front. It's not a surprise to me that they doubled up as far as getting Marquise Brown and then also getting another pass catcher. They need some guys.
I thought that was a great trade by Arizona and a kind of a puzzling trade by Baltimore.
I think it made sense from both sides. People were really trashing the Cardinals for it. And I think it's fine if you look at the fact that they got back a third round pick, right? So it mitigates some of the cost. They'll have them for 2 years for a total of, I don't know, what is it? Like $15, $16 million or something like that with the fifth year option. They can decide what happens after that. We don't really know also with Brown. I feel like he's one of those situations where if you want to just talk about guys, if you want to target like upside, quote unquote upside, then you're just like, he's a guy that could be interesting this year because we just don't know in a non Lamar Jackson offense, NFL offense, what he could potentially do. And he could have even had some big numbers last year if he could catch the ball. And I don't think he's always going to drop multiple touchdowns. I mean, he is getting open, right? He is getting open down the field for valuable catches. That sounds good. That sounds like a good thing
and
to me.
The shower narrative. I mean, you can't beat the shower narrative.
Yeah, that's part of it. I have a little bit less of the shower narrative than some.
Kyler wins the Heisman. Hollywood wins the Biletnikoff. You know, it's like, I don't, that's a pretty good shower narrative, right? I mean, that is Joe Burrow, Jamar Chase-esque, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. And people loved, I mean, Marquise Brown was the first wide receiver taken in the draft with DK and Debo and all those guys. So yeah, he obviously looked good playing with Kyler Murray before.
Yeah. All right. I mean, you got any other big peccadillos or bugaboos about this draft? I think that was a pretty good conversation.
No, I think that's, yeah, I don't have too much else going on here. I mean, it wasn't, you know, it was not a blockbuster. That's for sure. It was not a blockbuster, but
no, how can you say that? Any draft
was not a blockbuster.
AJ Brown and Hollywood Brown were traded within like 10 minutes of each other.
Okay. I'll give you that, but I'm talking about the draft itself, like teams that are hyping fan bases that are hyping themselves up over this. It's like, I don't know. Like I saw, of course, now I'm calling out PFF here. I think they had someone who, I don't know who it was. It's probably Sam Monson, or someone was like, this is a franchise defining draft for the Detroit Lions. I mean, maybe, I don't know. Like they still have Jared Goff as a quarterback, right? I don't know.
I think it was so stupid for Malik Willis to be a third rounder. Like I get all the criticisms.
Yeah, I'm
like,
totally in agreement with that.
He can't throw in the middle of the field or whatever, but I don't
care. No one wants Garoppolo or Baker. Garoppolo and Baker would have been pretty hot commodities in most off seasons, but no one seems to want anyone. Well, I'm a big Matt Corral guy. So I'm very interested because I think he has the, if I were going to pick like over unders for passing yards in season one for the rookies, I guess you'd have to lean Pickett because he's a first round pick, but I'd have Corral pretty close potentially.
Yeah.
Because Darnold's not good. We know that.
Do you like any rookie of the year bets so far?
What was that?
Pickens is 33-1. Rashad White is 80-1. And I kind of like that. I mean, that's a Leonard Fournette ankle turn away, I think.
Let me look here. I do not like, well, Burks is interesting.
Yeah.
Even though it's plus 750.
It's
so he's
just a huge price.
High.
Yeah.
He's already pretty high. People will probably be interested in Breece Hall. I don't really see it. I don't know.
It doesn't look great yet.
This is pretty ugly. If you want to go total long shot, what do we have here?
Rashad White, 80-1. I just gave it to you.
Yeah, I guess you're right. I mean, that's not bad. That's not bad because that is someone who could step in.
And all the people who like watch him play come away being like, that guy's sick. So I don't hate Jalen Tolbert 50-1 either, but that would also need like a CeeDee Lamb injury probably.
Yeah, I'm not big on like wide receivers potentially winning as rookies if they're not pretty high draft picks. Damian Pierce is 40-1. Now the problem is like a Texans problem. I kind of like,
yeah, he plays for a crappy team.
I kind of like Stingley as defensive rookie of the year potentially at 12-1, but I just feel like if it happens for the Texans, did it actually happen? Like, does it exist? Is the NFL even, is anyone aware that it happened? Like if Damian Pierce has 1,100 rushing yards, does anyone care?
No, they will want, I mean, by and large, these awards are won by players on teams that are winning games.
Yeah. But if you lead the NFL in rushing or something like that, that's helpful. How is Justin Ross on here? That's 41.
Oh, the people, like the people love
the same
Justin
as George
Ross.
Pickens.
Yeah.
Like how? He didn't even have a team until like a week after a few days after the NFL draft ended. Who else here? Zamir White, if you think Josh Jacobs, yeah, I guess maybe still is 60-1. Not that great.
Yeah, that's
what do you think about
that's why
Daniel Jones
so
leading the NFL in what's Daniel Jones' most passing yards?
No, not a chance.
Not a chance with the
Literally,
Josh Allen system.
I would. You'd have to give me like 500-1 to bet that on Daniel Jones.
Daniel Jones, how about 80-1? He's 80-1 right
because
now.
Because the thesis behind
he's below Davis Mills.
He should be.
But he's going to have protection now. He has Brian Daboll. Remember Daboll started with Josh Allen. Even when Josh Allen sucked.
Because
he would throw the ball 20 straight times at the beginning of a game.
The thesis behind Daniel Jones succeeding is that he turns into like a Josh Allen representation where a big chunk of that comes from rushing.
I guess, but I'm just saying, okay, just listen to this though. Theoretically, right? Here are the quarterbacks in order who are after Daniel Jones. Okay.
Yeah,
after
a bunch of nobodies.
Kenny Pickett, Malik Willis, Baker Mayfield, Taylor Heineke, Sam Darnold, Drew Locke, Justin Fields.
I would bet Fields over.
Yeah, maybe
Daniel
Marcus
Jones.
Mariota, Andy Dalton. These guys are like not even going to, most of them are not even going to play necessarily.
So just like a betting philosophy thing is, I'm only making this long shot bet that is like, and you're betting into a market, like calculate the hold on this. I bet the hold is like 30% or something insane on this market, but I'm only betting on one of these mega long shots if it happening is actually going to make me happy, right? Jalen Hurts last year, 125-1 to win MVP. That was a great bet because if it happened, it would make me happy. Daniel Jones leading the NFL in passing yards would be like a disaster for me financially anyway, because I'll have spent the whole offseason fading him, betting against the Giants, not playing him in DFS. Like it's just not likely to be a good outcome for me.
Yeah. Okay. That's fine. That's fine. I'm interested though. I'm interested in this 80-1 here.
Yeah. Well, you bet that. I think okay, I think Rashad White offensive rookie of the year is a better 80-1 bet.
Maybe. Yeah. I'll think about it.
Yeah. All right. What's coming up at PFF?
You know, the long hot summer, digesting the draft, getting best ball. It's all about the best ball content. These best ball streets are getting gold. Gold is lining the streets here with all these different drafters, best ball drafts coming out.
Drafters just launched theirs, $250,000 to first, which is like 10 times bigger than it was last year. It's like, DraftKings is going to do, I mean, theirs is going to be so big.
Yeah, I mean, traditionally, like, best ball content doesn't really do that much in numbers because it's just like the fantasy football.
Nerds. Yeah.
Yeah, the fantasy football normie is just like 5 billion times the size of best ball guys, but that's probably what I'm going to be concentrating more than anything else is doing that sort of content. I think it has a better window to getting people interested than dynasty content, honestly, in some ways. So I'll be doing stuff there and then trying to get more into betting stuff. I got to write up something on Daniel Jones, 81 to win most passing yards. That'd probably be just the next thing I'll put out there. And then the podcast, Unexpected Points, check it out, you know?
Yeah. There we go. All right, everyone. Kevin Cole, ProFootballFocus.com, Unexpected Points. We will be back next week.